Okay, welcome to the seminar and welcome to Alexandra. So before we give her the floor, let me introduce Alexandra. She's the Business Development Manager for the TDI Technology Department here at RAL. Having worked at STLC since 2017, she has spent the last 4 years managing TD's engagement in industry. She works, her work generates additional income for TD to reinvest into pioneering innovation. Her focus is on commercial opportunities that can translate STFC's scientific excellence into sustainable revenue and industrial impact. Please, welcome.
Thanks for inviting me to talk. So for those of you that happen to come to the one in May, you might remember that I was tasked along with Marion of assessing sort of the work that PPD can do, like commercial side of things or engagement with industry, and whether there are areas that you could develop to align better with the new PPRI strategies. And as we've been doing some of this work, I've started to realise that perhaps we haven't given PPD a very big grounding in what business development team do, or indeed what the business innovation director, which we call BID, do. So I thought it'd be useful to try and capture as many people as possible rather than trying to ground you all individually or in your groups to talk more about that, and then how I think that can apply to PPD. And that's most of what I'm going to try and do today. A lot of what I say is from the perspective of how I've viewed it either from the technology department or how I've seen it in other departments. But I do want to highlight that every department operates differently. And just because something works for technology does not necessarily mean it will work for you. So a lot of what I say is more ideas and things for you to think about. But ultimately, the decision has to come for you as to how you want to operate and how you think you can make this work for your department. So I think that is some background. Introduction is just to make brief. I know people like to know who they're talking to, so I'll just do a little brief introduction of how I got here. Then I'll do an overview of the ID and to like what makes up the department and how we work together, and then talk more about business development at STFC and how it works. Across other departments, give you some examples of where this is successful, and then cover some of the opportunities I think that we could look at going forwards in the future. So me, yeah. So I started with a degree in geology. I have not met many geologists at STFC since I've been here, which is a real shame, but it probably also explains why I've been helping Barbie quite a bit, because I do have small soft spot for that side of things. And in my early career, I worked as a geologist using my degree in oil and gas. And that gave me a good exposure to industry and how commercial and the corporate world works. But after a while, I thought, have a little change. And that's when I moved to STFC. And I worked originally in the innovation team, which is also technology transfer. So I got a good overview of what all the departments do, because that team works across all of STFC. And it was really interesting, like finding out about all the different things that we do as an organization. And then after a little while, I joined the business development team. And so that's what I've been doing for the past 4 years for the technology department. And so that's how I got here. So the business information directorate is split into four main areas. Obviously, I'm part of the business development side. But there is also innovation management, and campus and clusters. The reason this slide is COGS is because what we do influences what each of the other parts do. And we don't, it's not useful for us to work in isolation. And so, you know, a lot of the stuff where, I don't know, the incubation team might bring in people who rent labs on site, will then influence how the campus develops and the types of clusters that form in certain sector areas, and then all of it's sort of underpinned by things like the Industrial Relations Office, which is now under BID and works very closely with CERN, and then also marketing events, which arguably it's very difficult to do this development if you can't tell people what you do. So this is all what we are in like single slide, let's say. But I have done a slide on each of the parts just so you get a better idea of what they're trying to achieve. So in terms of bigger business incubation, that is about getting small businesses onto site, both here and at Glasbury, and we also have a few up at Edinburgh as well. And the idea is that we're helping small businesses in the UK grow and giving them access to some of the national laboratories. So these businesses tend to be quite technology focused or deep tech, that's how you want to look at it. And quite recently, sort of rebranded, we're saying, to be the deep tech catalyst. And as you can see, the kind of areas of interest, bio, quantum, health space, very aligned to what we do here at CSE. At the moment, we have over 140 tenants across all of our sites. I think it's actually across three of them. And then, yes, we helped them raise over 250 million in that past, I think it was like 10 to 15 years. And this is the type of thing that government should probably just point to. Yeah, the government like to hear about. So, you know, when we're reporting back out to government, they enjoy the science discovery, but what they really want to know is how many jobs have you created and like how are you growing it? And so that much feeds into that part of the mission. Similar with the campus development clusters, but just on a wider scale. So rather than, I'm going to call it inside the fence or within SGSE's land, campus is more about the whole of our campus or whole of site at Glasbury, and how we're helping with the local regions as well. So it was notable, if anyone caught the talk that Ian Chapman just did, that he mentioned in the directive from government that one of the specific areas was local, I can't remember what he called it, but it was essentially sort of like a place element in terms of how are you supporting the local economies around your sites. And this basically goes quite a long way to supporting that. And like I said, there, this has raised over 1.4 billion in private investment. And you can see the kind of like the growth that is planned for like the next 5 or 10 years, both at Glasbury and at Harwell. Innovation management. Yes, so this is where I started at SGSE, technology transfer. So there is a team, hopefully some of you have interacted with them, that manage the intellectual property portfolio of SGSE. So any time that you generate something novel, ideally you'll talk to them and say, I've generated this new thing and I think it's novel and no one else has done it before. And perhaps we should look at whether there are applications in other areas beyond just your scientific work. And their job is mostly to protect the IP that belongs to SGSE, not just for commercialization, but also to ensure that we have freedom to operate. And then look at where those inventions could be translated into real-world products or solutions. And hopefully, if it's successful, generate some sort of royalty income from licensing that out to companies. So this is a really useful way of the department getting passive income in terms of once you've done this and you've licensed it to a company, the revenue will keep flowing as long as they keep using it without too much extra work from the department. So it's quite high effort at the start, relatively low effort in the long run. Technology do quite a lot of this. We have quite a lot of royalty income, which we then use to support other endeavors every year. Okay, business development. So yeah, the purpose for business development is mostly industrial engagement. And like I said, different departments view this differently. But generating external income is particularly important at the moment, especially when we're getting a lot of pressure to justify our budgets. And if that doesn't motivate you, I think the more important thing is that we generate new products and solutions for real-world challenges, so that science that we do and the investment that's made in us can have a greater impact than just discovery. You know, if we never did this, then we would never have any advancement in things like healthcare. So, you know, there's multiple reasons for doing it. Skills development's another one, you know, training up new people to do lots of interesting things, and having a diversified project portfolio. which is twofold in terms of diversified, in terms of you're not putting all your eggs in one basket, but also diversified is in, you find, especially I find with a lot of people in technology, especially the early careers, they quite like to work on a lot of different things, and they find different challenges depending on the projects they're working on. So, you know, if you just put them on one project and that's all they ever do, they sort of often are asking to have some sort of diversification in what they're doing. So how the business development team is spread out. So at the moment, it's spread into two parts. So Rick, who spoke in May, manages the RAL and the Edinburgh sites, and then Massimo manages the Glasgow site. And then you can see that all the labs nearly have business development managers. And yes, at the moment, the ICIS vacancy, I think they're interviewing for this week, and I think they've already been interviews for the APCC. They may have someone appointing for that. But either way, hopefully by next year, we'll have someone in place for all of those. I put Marion and I here on the cross between, because both TD and SCD are cross-site. So about a third of technology space for Darsbury, and it's probably somewhere similar for CD. So we actually work across both sites. CLF operate ever slightly differently. And so Pizzy is sort of there. Equivalent of a business development manager, although she has a slightly different title and she also manages some of their comms. But you know, it she still interacts with us and she still generates business for CLF. And I think one of the things that I get asked sometimes quite a lot by the labs is how we manage to put through recruitments in this time as a group recruitment freeze. And it's true that probably does help, you know, that all is on EB. But I think that his job is made easy because there are only around 35 people in the business development team, but they're managing a pipeline between 40 and 250 million. So effectively, for every one business development manager you bring in, you will expect to generate at least another million worth of income. And it's quite a compelling case, to be honest. So this is sort of like a list of things of how business development managers support business. And some of what Marion and I do for our respective departments. Some of it is more important than others, depending on how we operate. And, you know, I, for instance, in technology, tend to concentrate a lot more on the commercial projects, whereas I think Marion in SCD will concentrate a little bit more on the grant opportunities. So how you might operate in PT can be different, but this is sort of more of an overview. So something that is already happening in PT is strategy for business development. All the business development managers will be inputting into that. A large part of my job is identifying new and ongoing opportunities to create the pipeline of work. And then, yes, interacting with stakeholders, having someone that you can send out to events or send out to certain meetings where you want representation. A lot of the business development managers will do that. And then, like I said, grant funding opportunities, business cases, and also moving an opportunity to a bullet proposal. So it's one thing generating a lead, having a business say, oh, I'd like to work with you. There's a whole other thing, moving that all the way through to having a signed contract and the income coming in. And I think that's actually very difficult for a department to achieve without having a business development manager to, like, manage that process and push it along. Because, you know, everyone else, they have day jobs to do, and it's really a bit taxing to expect sort of like your scientific staff to do that. And then obviously working with the rest of the business innovation department, because that's sometimes where a lot of the leads come from. So yes, the business development process. Thought this was quite, I realise we don't have this written anywhere, and I think a lot of people are mystified in how we go about things. So I've tried to break it down, although it's a very simplified version of how it works. But most things will start with some sort of inquiry, and the places we generate these from are relatively varied. I started collecting this data for technology because I think it might be quite interesting. I find it quite interesting as well. So the Python Unlock is a current breakdown of the inquiries that we've had in technology this financial year and sort of where they come from. And you can see quite a lot of them have come from events because I attend a high number of industry events. And then another significant portion comes from my other colleagues in DID. So either they will have seen someone at an event and pass it on to me, or maybe it's like one of the tenants. So then the incubation team will say, oh, there's this tenant, they want, I don't know, some sort of thermal modeling, you know, could you help them out? But yeah, so we do work as a team in that sense to generate new opportunities. And then quite importantly, the third highest is technology staff themselves. So they often go out and talk at scientific forums or conferences. And although, yes, it's quite science focused, taking at those types of things, you will also have industry partners that will attend, especially in like the R&D side of industry. And we generate quite a lot of work through people seeing a poster or a presentation from the engineers or scientific staff in technology, and they're saying, actually, we'd like to work with you on this, or we'd like to do some collaboration, or we'd like to be paying for this. And so quite a lot of things come in that way. But I guess I want to highlight that, because assuming you do the same, this could be a way of generating opportunities, and what you would need is when that happens that you have someone like this as another manager and like take that opportunity and make it a reality. So, yes, once you have an inquiry come in, oh, I probably should have said again, something the business development manager does is normally do an initial evaluation, and this is to take the burden off technical staff. So, you would hope your business development manager would have quite a good idea of what you will do and the capabilities you have. So as you can see there, I also get quite a lot of emails, and you know, stuff will come in and I'll be like, this isn't really ours, it's our space, or this isn't really ours, but it might be CLF. And so directing where they should inquire should go is another part of the job that takes the burden off the technical leads, because I can basically gate anything that I don't spread up with or anything I don't want to work on. Before I have to get them involved. So then the next bit is doing some technical review. So there is a limit to my technical knowledge, and especially in technology, when they work off all parts of engineering, can't really be expected to know about details of all of it. I definitely wouldn't have a PhD in everything that they do. So there is a point where I bring in whoever I think should lead this technically, say, you know, this is what we've got, I think we can do this, you know, am I right? And then, you know, is this something you want to work on? And, you know, that is a genuine consideration. If there's something, it's like, this is going to be boring. You know, we don't have to work on every opportunity, but often it quite aligns with something they're interested in, which is probably why I brought it to them to start with. And then sort of like, do we have the time to work on it? And this is where some of the challenges start, because I would assume you have the same issue as me, in that there's generally a bottleneck in technical staff because we're generally under-resourced and normally already have on other things. So sometimes this leads to a bit of time management, sometimes it leads to us actually saying no to opportunities. So last year I tried to capture some of this, and 10% of the things that got through my gate, we didn't work on because we didn't have staff. And last year that amounted to somewhere around like £1 million worth of opportunity that we basically just couldn't work on. This was more so that we could start capturing what we're prioritizing instead of it, and also whether we should justify improvement. But it's still interesting to know. Also, timing opportunities are a bit tricky. If someone comes in and says, I want to do this in 6 months' time, you know, I can't do it until like a year. It's the same with grad calls. You know, sometimes a grad call will come out, deadlines in like 3 months, and I'm never going to be able to make that. Sometimes, I've put some options. You might be able to get around some of this, but it's not all easy. Delegating technical reviews, so, you know, I would tend to go to the reviews first, but they might be able to delegate them down to say, actually, this person didn't make look at it. Sharing resource across the groups. I don't know any of the structure how frequently you do that. I think technology readily admit they're not very good at it. So that is another way to try and like, share what people that you have. I know, like, from a lot of in chat stories, like, keen on like forming groups around certain opportunities. Maybe we'll see more about SDSE. I don't know. And then that would lead into collaborating with other national labs, which we probably could do more across the whole organization. So once you've done your technical review and you've scoped a project and have a project plan-ish, some point in this process, you would put it in your bid register, depending on the department, depending on what point they want you to put it in. Because then really need the department to review the opportunity. Now, it's small, that might not need so much bigger, but you know, it's quite a large thing, like multi-millions. You probably will need some violence on the department if you're going to take the scale. So something that then starts happening here is you bring in other parts of UKRI, like legal and finance. And legal particularly tend to have a big bottleneck in the staff. They have a lot of work on this. Similarly, contract negotiations can be quite long, especially if you're working with a lot of money or a company that doesn't like a lot of the things that we have to fit in as a government organisation. And then, yeah, pricing and deadlines, that can be a bit of a potential as well. There are some commercial contract staff, RAS-based have them, and I think BLD is now pushing more of these, so why not in the future? And then also, expectation management is really, really important, because companies always want everything yesterday. And so managing their expectations is quite another part of what this amount of management do. And then I would expect, after you've had a signed contract, and think it's a done deal, but then the project will become PD managed, so within the department. And that's sort of another reason why you need not be registered, because that's how you're going to generate things like certificates. I put this in just to show what the current pipeline is. So one of my colleagues generated this week, so you kind of get an idea of what we're working on. So the pipeline is always a funnel. You always have a lot more opportunities at the top, and then they'll slowly drop out, things will change, or you might not win proposals and all sorts of things until you get what you actually sign at the bottom. So the 256 million number is everything that we currently have in our system, which doesn't mean everything, it's just everything that's being recorded currently in the system, of opportunities we're working on across SDSE. The weighted is where they are in the pipeline process. So if they're in qualify, which is the start of the process, then it's going to be weighting. But it's not going to be weighted as high because if you're in the closed bit, which basically means you're not that far from the site. So the idea of having a weighting is you get a better idea on how much of that 250 will actually turn into contracts, which is why I said between 40 and 250, because that number can change quite dramatically. The one I wanted to show here was it is quite noticeable that there is nothing in qualify or develop or PD or ICES. And this is because ICES haven't had a business development manager for a year now. And so there is no one feeding that pipeline, bringing in the opportunities and moving them through. And I suspect these other ones are in there just legacy on when Graham, who was there, this is where he's doing work. So if you don't have anything coming in the top of the funnel, you're not going to have anything coming out along. The one that is in the PPC is the one that I put in there. And that's for Bowlby, because they're trying to work with a company and the university, going for the SRC SDSE joint facilities access fund. And so I put that in the address. But other than that, I haven't seen anyone else feeding this pipeline for PPD. And yeah, why you would probably quite like to have your own business development manager. Projects. Yes, so when it goes well. I started with technology because why not? So I think maybe some of you might be already aware of this, but the CMS sensor design group do quite a lot of commercial work. And this is just one of their many projects where they work for the commercial company. And so it all starts with what capability do you have. So that group has the capability That's a button. That's a long button. Oh no, sorry. Has the capability of developing sensors that capture images at millions of frames per second. And company called Specialized Imaging came to us and said, we've heard you can do this. Can you do this for us? And they gave a specification of what they wanted based on a gap in the market that they saw for high-speed cameras. And so, you know, CMOS group were like, yeah, probably could do that. And did a commercial partnership with them where we basically developed a sensor that now is in this Piranha high-speed camera. And so this is quite a while ago, this is back in, I don't know when they first approached us, but we they first had a camera on the market in 2014, way before my time. And then that product was so innovative that they came on the waterfront in 2016. In 2023, so 2 years ago, we delivered the 150th sensor module. And so far, we've delivered, I think, over 180 modules. And so over that, let's say, 10-year period, we've generated over £3.5 million from working with them. And similarly to what I was saying with licensing, obviously, this was quite a big project up front. You know, we had to do a whole sensor design. But then, like, after 2014, we were just supplying sensors. We weren't really doing any design iterations from that point onwards. So a lot of that revenue just comes in, and we can spend it on other things because we don't actually need to do any work with staff. I'd like to manage that. I mean, there is someone that manages some of our supply, but it's minimal. This one's probably a bit different in terms of more of a facilities access type of story. So Aztec operates electron accelerators, you know, and Replicat Scan Systems have quite a good relationship with them, partly because one of the people that used to work for Aztec now works there, really helps with relationships. And they wanted to test one of their products, and they wanted the ability to have quite like a high energy facility, which Aztec is, but also the flexibility to change things within the testing. And I think they find that any commercially available facility either wasn't high enough energy or wasn't flexible enough. So they came to Aztec, and they have generated about 100K from work that they've done with Replicat Systems. And so, you know, they talk about this on the website, and like, in addition to the revenue, it's also the impact stories that we could tell about how this facility, which is a science facility, is helping companies as well. And actually, the other thing I wanted to point out was these types of things, although they're not a lot of money, they do work well for the business case when you want to do more infrastructure in the future. So I would say a lot of the ISIS Endeavour business case was supported by Graham Sloan, the business development manager, saying, in addition to the science, these are all the economic impacts that you will generate. And it's as much stronger case we have stuff like this to back in. Marion sent me some examples of what they do in SCD. To be honest with you, I'm not familiar with all of them, but you probably can look up some of them. I think she did send me some notes as well on some of this, but I think the top left is about drug discovery. And then Credo, actually, I have heard a little bit about this, about climate resilience. There's quite a lot of interest in this, actually, from the industry, because they're modelling a lot of UK infrastructure and their resilience to changes in the climate or flooding or bad storms. But then just having a database of UK infrastructure, I think, is quite useful for a lot of other sectors. So I would say that's a very successful part of what they do. Probably one of the ones that I would have done if you're particularly interested. Oh, and then I couldn't not mention Bolby. So since I've been working with them, Bolby have had a few opportunities come in from history. The first one I worked on with Sean before was AWE. So I think they've actually been working with AWE for at least 8 years, and up until 2023, a lot of the work that they did was covered by grants or similar funds. But then going forwards, AWE wanted to continue having their kind of SP system in the lab. This wasn't funded by me and a grant. So sort of said, we won't have to pay for it then. And so went through quite a long process of how that would work on the contracting side. But in the end, we managed to get a signed contract where AWU are paying all the 40k a year hosted system. I think that was their first commercial contract. This is highly difficult. The other thing that we did recently was this company called Umbrella Space Science, who are also in one of our business. This is sort of another way that our information that feeds stuff like this development. Wanted to use some of the radioactive sources down at Bowlby and do some tests in the low radiation background. So Bowlby provided 3 days of access to the laboratory. It's not like large sums of money, but it's probably a fair example of how you can just do a small project on the side of like normal work without it interfering too much. And then also do case studies about it afterwards. And this is something we're exploring a bit more actually at Bowlby, is what are the tests can we do down there and sort of other, other sectors that would be interested in using these radiation resources. Right, opportunities with the PVD. So this is not an exhaustive list of what you can do. These are just some things I've seen while I've been talking to you that I think you could consider. So you have a lot of equipment and I've had a small tour of some of the things that you have. And there's definitely things that you have you might not be using all the time, you might be able to either loan out or have users come in to use. So I know the X-ray radiation source facility isn't working at the minute, but assuming it did, this is something that companies are quite interested in, and you've probably seen, maybe you've seen, but I've done something similar with Darsbury, where their detector systems group have an X-ray radiation facility. And in fact, I helped them source the grant funding that we secured to buy that facility. And part of the business case was that when they were fixing it, you would offer it out to other people, both in academia and in industry. And so far, we've already had two industries, but one industry user and an academic. And they've both done small tests that are looking at using it for longer periods of time in the future. So definitely scope there. And similarly, if it's too cumbersome, let's say, to have users on site, there probably are things you could do where someone just sends you samples. I think this is the same for Bowlby. Rather than necessarily taking them down the line at the time, you could just have something where people send you samples, you use the tests, and you send it back. And it's relatively uninvasive for like general operations. Yes, cryogenic facilities and climate chambers. This is in tech, we have a cryogenics team. They are fully committed on the aerial project and have next to no time to do anything else. But I get a lot of inquiries about our cryogenic facilities and how we might be able to support industry, particularly in quantum computing, space, and hydrogen. There's a lot of people looking in those areas, facilities and expertise. So sometimes it's not just the equipment we have, but also the expertise behind it that people are looking for. And so that's an area might worth considering. And then, yeah, the electronics and testing facilities. Similarly, there are various companies that will probably benefit from both your like, systems, but also the knowledge in this area. So, something to consider. Another option, technical consultancy. So, you're not a fan or you don't have equipment in your area for business, then our expertise is very valuable. And there are a lot of companies, particularly actually the smaller companies, that don't have their own internal technical teams or maybe have like one person they can't kind of cover all of the areas they need. And so, you know, we offer our capabilities where we can. I would say I, again, get a lot of inquiries for FPGA designs, and I think this might be an area that you want to look at, because I think you hear you could do relatively varied and short projects to help out companies that don't have skills in this area. Whereas on the ASIC development, arguably, they would have to be quite a lot longer projects. And so it's really like how you balance that out with your program. I think you probably fit in small, the short projects relatively easy, but if you're doing sort of like multi-year, multi-million sort of projects, then you've got to be working out how that fits in the rest of your portfolio. Something that has come up more recently is learning system networking. So in the finance sector, they use this quite a lot for their trading. I think we, as an organization, do quite a lot of both like data acquisition, but also sort of networking and hardware around, you know, the data transmission that comes out, things like CERN or other large facilities. I do wonder whether there is some crossover we could probably explore. I do imagine these types of companies have money to spend. Funding, yes. So a lot of people say, great, especially in tech, you know, they won't do anything about that project code. Great, but how do I work on this? Give me a project code. So within STFC, we have various internal funds that support work with industry or companies. I put them all here, I'm going to go through them all, but it's just, I'm going to start sharing these slides. If you just want to get shared, there are links, so you can look them up. The other place I often look for funding is Innovate UK, because they support small businesses quite a lot. So especially if there's like a tenant on site or a small business on campus, and they're like, I really want to work with you, but you know, I don't have the capital, I don't have the money, small business, then generally Innovate UK will have some sort of fund that can support that. And I don't really work in the AI bit, because we don't really have a lot of that. But Hartree use for AI quite a lot to help companies. I'm not sure maybe that's an innovative thing as well. And then there are specific sectors that Innovate UK have all sorts of challenges today. The industry and then make calls around them. These are some of the calls working at the moment. I just put these up out of interest really for you. I make a list like this for technology. And once a quarter, I normally prevent it at their management meetings. So they're aware of what's open, and it's in case they want to go for it. But also, it shows the trend where funding is going. So, you know, we're getting a lot of funding going into materials, actually. And I would say STFC are quite well placed to try and take advantage of that. Then also, nuclear seems to be having a new resurgence. So, you know, we work as an organization quite a lot of radiation, a lot of it probably could be translated to some of the nuclear challenges. And one that there was a webinar on just yesterday that I think we're going to try and target is this SSE perspective partnerships. So you might notice that not all of this comes from industry. In fact, a lot comes from UKRI. But I think STFC will still consider money from UKSSE as it's still our money. So still going to be supporting us. And the idea of perspective partnerships is that you'll work with an industry partner on a challenge. And I can't remember what the full fund is, it might be like 40 million, and they're asking for minimum proposals of $500,000. So it's a relatively large fund. Oh, yes, it would be remiss of me not to mention the industrial sectors. So again, if you've been watching any of the UKRI talks, Ian Chapman's very clear that we're aligning with the UK's industrial strategy and the missions of the government. And in the industrial strategy, they will tell you about the sectors that are considered high growth in the UK. So these are eight sectors. So if someone says ISA, they basically mean the eight high growth sectors in the UK that account for about 30% of the UK economy. And you might have seen actually today when they've announced some of the breakdown of the budget for UKRI, they're aligning with these. So this is probably where funding will get diverted through. So I imagine if you're going to go for funding in on the industrial side, let's say, or in the improving lives bucket, let's say, or the growth bucket, you're going to have to align yourself with one of these. I think you're already quite well aligned with digital technologies. Definitely quantum and semiconductors, a big part of it. I also think STFC in general, yet to find out more about PPT specifically on the advanced materials, but agritech, because that's what we're doing at Bolby, certainly on the agritech side, and space, similarly, the bond with space as well. And then, you know, if it does turn out that you end up with some other financial services side of things, then you'll be in like fintech area. So I put these up as suggested actions. This is what I think PPG should look at doing if you want to move forward in these areas. Number one, business development manager. I don't think there's another national lab that doesn't have one. I looked at that list, all the national labs other than you have one, and I think it's going to be really hard for you to do a lot of this work without one. So just that would be my takeaway point. Either way, it would be useful for you to map your capabilities onto the IS8. I've done this already for technology, a lot of other departments have to. It's sort of part of the commercial plan, but in a kind of, it will help you when you're looking for opportunities going forward. Reviewing your equipment usage, and then what I did with the X-ray facility in Dalesbury is target certain markets for certain people. So rather than just do a sort of generic, tell everyone this is what we have, think about who exactly you think would want to use this, and then ask them specifically, do you want to use this? Do you want to work with us? It just means that you're much more likely to get someone using it, and it's just a lot quicker way of getting people in. Yes, consider your ability to address common industry requests. I probably can make this a VCU, but there are things that kind of come up over and over again when I'm talking to industry. Everyone is always interested in CAD modeling or sort of anything where you're modeling, complex modeling, let's say, CFD too. We also get quite a lot of requests for lab space, some of the information team will cover. And then, like I said, FPGA design. There are some things that come up over and over again. And if you have a capability to address these, then that might be another area that we'd like easy for you to target. Software portfolio. I mean, this is something that Marion probably would have been asked a little bit more about, but it would be useful for you to know what software you have. I mean, any of it has an option to take like a commercial route. I realise that a lot of it might be open source, so you might want to keep it that way, but there are actually ways of having a software where there's an open source route and there's a parallel commercial route, depending on who's accessing it and the kind of functionality that they want. I'm going to create a list of favourable businesses. This is like the types of people that you would want to work with. Similar, I guess, to the targeted marketing. It's like, are there companies on site, for instance, that you know exist and have kind of like common goals? And, you know, create a list of those types of companies and then see about whether you want to start contact with those. And then I put the last thing was share my successes. So, you know, the more you do this and talk about it, it'll get recognised and I think you'll get a lot more support. And I think I just wanted to close with, I realise I've covered a lot of how commercial projects work because I thought that was the area that we haven't educated on. But I also hear a lot of concerns, let's say, in the labs about us doing commercial work instead of the science. And that is not how I see it at all. I can't do my job if we didn't do the science program, because a lot of what people want is because we do the science program. Like, our expertise and our knowledge comes from pushing the boundaries of science and doing all of like the frontier research. And that's what people are interested in. If we just did commercial work, we'd be no different to like half the other engineering consultancies, or at least not in technology. So it's fundamentally important that we retain that. However, there are areas where we align with what industry needs, and that's the bit you need to focus on. Where is what you're doing aligned with what industry wants? And can you make the two things merge? And ideally, you get one funded by the other. So something that, again, the CMOS group do really well is they work out what they want for science. Like, they work out whether they want to go down to 65 nanometer, and they work out the specifications they need for a new sensor. And then they look at industry and say, I think this person over here would like these specifications. We talk to them, and sometimes they don't align exactly, but normally we can come up with something that covers both areas. And then often industry might pay for it, or even if we fund it internally, they will pay for it afterwards. So it's the way where we can make those two things work together, not doing one instead of the other.
Questions for Alexander? Yeah, Shanae.
Yes, thank you very much. Maybe a few contacts for Mark, and then a question for you, if I may.
Yeah.
So I think we want to thank you and Marion and Rick Allen very much for this engagement. Right, if we rewind to earlier in the year, you came along and gave a seminar about BID. It was Rick and yourself and Marion, and the idea of doing some kind of scoping within our department, just a survey of what might be possible, was how we decided to move forward. And you've done that, and I think that that gives us something really interesting to talk about as a department. So I think just a couple of comments and then I do have a question for you. So one really key person in all this is Jens, who is updating the commercial plan. And he's going to talk about that on Monday in our department meeting, and then there'll be a chance to talk further about this as a strategic item for us. Because what Alexander says about how this fits into the context of the fact that we're a science delivery department, and what does this mean? We need to discuss that. But I think you've identified some really interesting opportunities. I would make two comments about your pipeline plot, if you like, and the table that you showed there. So I think part of this is about scoping how we could get more entries in the table there. And like I say, I think you've given us a lot of food for thought on that. You from TD and Marion from SCD. And I think that's great. And we need to think about how to engage with that while not harming our science programme, but using the two. But the other is the question that I have for you, which is that in many cases, I think there are many people in this room who would think that they have certainly done things which have led to outputs in other parts of this organisation. And I think that part of the argument here is not just saying, right, come on, get some entries in the table, but it's about maybe recognising that there is a pipeline there. And, you know, directors of those other departments will say that in open forum. Mm-hmm. If you don't have the science driver that's saying, we need this new spec, then there are many things that wouldn't have emerged in this organisation from that.
Yeah.
That's not an easy thing to capture.
No.
But I have a strong interest that we do capture that, so that it's not true that we're starting from zero, and it's not true that our work hasn't had that impact already. Can you suggest anything for how we might address that part of it? Fully agree you want to, engage with it and all the rest. How do we rectify that bit of the equation?
Do you want to answer this?
Sorry,
for me?
I was going to interject there and say.
I've discussed this with you
maybe Chris has a thought about Kirana in particular, because it was such a wonderful example.
Yeah, it's good, isn't
but
it?
But it is, as far as I'm aware, it's TalGest technology that was enabled by the DeepWell technology that we developed mm-hmm. with TD and funded at the time, and then spun off into other things.
Yeah.
And it's also, I think, one of the, for us, deeply frustrating examples where the CMOS sensor design group is then completely spun away from us and is doing sensor designs. And as you say, they look at the science driver. I would question that. I think what they're looking at is a technology that they can access with a view to being able to develop a new product. And many of us are then worried that what happens is we see something, it goes away, and all we get for it is a warm handshake, and that's it.
Yeah.
So whilst what we would want is clearly that the technology develops further but comes back to us. So TalGest 65, we can't currently do anything about because we have no money to pay for the effort to get chips designed, which TD is designing, but for commercial purposes. Whilst the enabling technology behind that is very much a quantum physics technology, and it just gets carried forward into other directions. And I think we would want to help support that pipeline, but we also do need to see that there's a return on it.
Yeah, so I think the golden future, which I think most people that I've spoken to about this are in favour of, is that we recognise where are the right bits to do which parts of the work, right? And that, TD is a wonderful place for one type of development, and this is another, and we don't need to make them do things that they don't naturally do, but we need the full sort of life cycle to be captured in credit terms, if you like.
Yeah.
So,
I don't have a magic solution, unfortunately, and I agree we're terrible with credit in this organisation. And I see it, go similarly with RAL Space. We will design something, make something, build something for RAL Space, goes into one of their satellites, never get mentioned. And we're like, this satellite launched and RAL Space did all this. And, it's the same across the organisation. I agree, we do need to get better giving credit, especially maybe before we could get away with it because there was less scrutiny. I think if there's going to be scrutiny now, we do need to get that right. Otherwise, like you say, certain contributions don't get what they deserve, and then you know people assume that you're not working towards these things when you are. Yeah, I'm probably not in the position to tell you how that would work. And arguably, it should be something maybe that the National Lab Board, you know, try and work out and arguably like those that up to EV. It needs to be done on an SDFC level because, you know, big tier one end of it, but I would say some of the other labs do a similar thing where they won't have it you or anyone else. So, yes, I don't have an answer. It does need to change.
But just to follow up on that, does the business development unit communicate with the public engagement? And how frequent are your communications? Just to be able to communicate that, okay, this is the business which is being developed here in the different labs.
Yes. Maybe not specifically so much for public engagement, but definitely with comms teams. So for the communications teams.
That's an international, internal communications team.
Every department does differently. So in technology, we only have one communications person, so it's just both internal and external. Arguably, some of the other departments, we have a larger team, they can do both. But yeah, I would say the way I operate, at least, is quite entwined because we need to be putting out a system message. And as you know, the message, for instance, that goes on our website is what maybe like a lot of businesses will see. And you know, the impact stories similarly are what people will see. So we do need to work together and try to work.
Yes, Liz.
Yes.
Chris.
Yeah, just building on what Sinead and Jens were saying. I mean, there's a 50-year-old story, right, of the success of this department in terms of innovation. And a lot of it did link to technology department years ago. It gets so long, there's so many features of it. But basically, I mean, in terms of, I'm just thinking of what could we describe as expert users, of which I was one. But we have Steve Watts, who became professor at Manchester University. We have Konstantin Stefanov. We have Sudong. We have famous people who made their reputation in that way. And it's all to do with imaging devices, silicon imaging, pixel devices. And it started in 1974, the November Revolution, the discovery of CHARM. And we thought, silicon pixel detectors might be a way forward. We happened to find a company, which is now actually just a housing development, the Hearst Research Center, but it was part of GSGC, which was innovating CCDs in the UK and so on. It was mostly going on elsewhere, but there was this company. And they were thinking of these things for television camera applications, right? And however, there was a student in Cambridge who was using them for astronomy and finding that he could see far further into space than he could in film. So that set the beginning of that thing going. And we thought if they're good for seeing distant galaxies, they may be okay for detecting particles. And so we tried and we had a similar success. That was the beginning of it. And it went on for decades. And so this is working with a company which changed its name several times. It became EEV and E2B, Teledyne E2B. It's still there. It's now in Chelmsford, no longer in Wembley. And still some of the same people. And that has benefited tremendously from the PPD input. We did a huge detector, the first 307 megapixel detector for SLD, where the funding came all from the USA. Because we had no funding, we were approved by the selection panel to help build the detector. But actually, all that happened in the end was that the US supplied about $6 million to do the development and to then build, and then for us to build the detector, which we did, a huge success. And most recent example is that just 10 years ago, when I was long retired, Ian Shipsey invited me to join in a study because they were building these prototype detectors for the Vera Rubin telescope, 3.2 gigapixels, which saw its first light just this year, so 10 years later, just during 2015. And there, they'd made prototypes which worked beautifully, and the pre-production ones didn't work at all. And they had weekly meetings at E2B, which I was invited to attend and did. And I could see immediately that they were going the wrong direction. They thought it was a design problem, and I was convinced that was wrong. And then the leader of that group went on holiday for a week. So I snuck into E2B. I knew all the people and met Kevin Ball, the head of production, and said, you know, I think it's in the production, not in the design. And over coffee, we thought of a few things, and one of them proved to be correct. And within a week, they were making devices that worked again. And they were about to lose that contract. And that's many millions. And also they would have had a rotten detector because they would have used DALSA devices. So that was saved by, again, you know, PPD activity. So there has been a lot of work going in this direction. And, you know, I think that just expert users working with the companies can provide a very good input and save and make a lot of money for the companies, actually.
So. Yeah. And part of the challenge is communicating those things, like, you know, what you were saying about whether you wear the pumps. You know, there's a lot of things that you do that you need to communicate that you do.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, no one else knows about them.
Absolutely.
And, you know, that then goes back to the credit
side. Yeah, that's right. And I think, I mean, those are all quite active. Sorry. Those are all quite active conversations, really. And I talked to Marcus French about this. It's a shared concern, I think, if you like, right?
Yes.
How we do this,
yeah,
how to account for it. Yeah.
Let us give opportunity to Gary on Zoom,
okay.
And then we are back to the room. Yeah, Gary, please go ahead.
Thanks. Just quickly, because of time, I had three comments stroke observations. Alex, further to your comment and suggested action about shouting about successes, observation, so question is, do we, one way to achieve that is by writing short, simple case studies. So a question is, do we in PPD routinely capture such successes using case studies? And if not, maybe that is something we could do, which is relatively straightforward and easy and not intensive, resource intensive. Secondly, is PPD fully plugged into the innovation management aspect, as you presented, Alex? As in, do we culturally, as we do our science, in the back of our head, think where there is something innovative here, do we think about capturing and potentially protecting and then exploiting that intellectual property? Is that a cultural thing that we that runs through PPD? So that's more of a comment. Again, I'm not sure we have time to address it here, but that's something that we should perhaps think about, because I'm too removed from it to comment, but you guys will understand that and whether that is part of our culture or not. And lastly, in terms of commercial income, greater use of the bugs facility at Bulby in terms of material screening, that's a specific opportunity for possible income is my thought there.
Stuart, I think we wanted to...
Oh, yeah, so sorry, Gary, we can probably have a chat about this after, but yeah, I mean, we do capture case studies. So Otterley, in particular, our current communication student, we'll put stuff together for the newsletter and we figure out which things, it can even be quite small things that are sort of relevant for outside consumption as well. We haven't had anything as concise as we've done this thing and it was really nice with the company, but we should. I think it'd be really good to have that more. Yeah, we've obviously covered a lot of science highlights and put those out on LinkedIn and things like that. We've got them into main other STSC channels, but it's something we can do. We can certainly do more of, and it's helpful for people to be thinking of things that work in that way. But yeah, at some level, if someone does something within the department and doesn't tell anyone, we never find out. So it's internal communication.
You suggest that we need a business development manager. I was wondering who pays for them.
Yeah.
That actually depends on the department. Some of the departments pay for themselves. I think Marion's fully funded by SCD. I'm fully funded by BOD. And then there's some departments do a half and half. So it's, it depends on your operating model. And there are different range of ways.
So many.
Yeah.
So in the current absence of a business development manager, is the capacity for the other business development managers to feed these PPD? Because even from personal conversations with you, there's stuff that seems like you that comes your way that could be relevant to us, like you mentioned at PDA development and other stuff. Like, do the other managers have the capacity to feed into PPD?
If you asked me maybe even 6 months ago, I might have said yes. But for the same reason that's becoming very important for you, this is becoming very important for the other departments. And so they have ramped up their requirements from the business development managers on us. feels sometimes it feels like exponentially, but definitely ramped it up a lot, you know, across all departments. So both Mary and I are like very finding it very difficult to keep up, because we're the only one in our departments that, you know, you saw some of the other ones who got schemes, might be a bit easier. So it's true that we often feed each other different areas of work, but normally I will feed it to a business development manager. So if I see something for our space, I will give it to Charlie and say, you know, I think this is our space, and then, you know, they will deal with it. I probably could do the same for you, but then you'd have to decide who that person would be. I have been doing it while like I said, because I have a soft spot and because I quite enjoy all their work, but it is becoming tricky to balance that with my technology department. So I would say in the interim, if you have really immediate opportunities, you know, when there's a company and they like desperately want to work with you and we like could get something through for signed contract relatively easily, yes, but you won't get any of the feed in that comes from sort of like the broader work that this strength manager does. I don't think I could like it's sort of like quite a minimal thing that I'd be offering there rather than kind of like full spectrum of work. So that's why I think it's become, as I do this more, it becomes more apparent that you could really do with someone to do the whole thing.
I mean, the speaker to themselves like it.
Yeah, I'd say particularly for Bobby. I haven't covered so much of Bobby today, partly because Seanan has asked me to do this separately again, and then with like a Bobby focus, and maybe do some brainstorming afterwards. But yes, I think they alone could like do with at least half a person, let alone, yeah, the rest of
the. Let's make a comment on that. There is a plan here, right? And the plan is that the survey's been done, and that's how we started the year. It was with the recognition that we don't have that BDM support, and that there's probably stuff to do. I think the survey's been extremely successful in showing that there's scope. Alongside that sits Jens's work, right, on updating the commercial plan, and you know. It has been said all the way through the year that where this has to end, if you want to do it, is with some actual business development manager support, right? If people ask this of us, that's what has to happen. And maybe other things too, right? I think that's one of the useful things about the survey is, and Jens' work is really understanding what does it take to do this, right?
Yeah.
So that's the plan, if you see what I mean. It's not the other way around. It's that, you know, we went into this knowing that there would be a need at the end and then we could demonstrate the need. And I think this is that's why I say it's been such a valuable piece of work. I mean, now it relies on people seeing interest in these aspects, and then you maybe for a short time having to shoulder people saying, "I really like that." And it also relies on us as a department having that conversation on Monday as well, which is okay. To what extent do we want to shoulder this? Can we, while we're all, you know, project funded to do specific projects, how do we balance that and make it possible? But yeah, there's a plan, and I hope that means that the bid will recognise it rather than us needing to draw it out of department funds, which I believe sort of varies, but I think that's what we're thinking.
I've got some practical questions about the monies that you talked about.
Mm-hmm.
So if we take the high-speed camera example, and you talked about 3.5 million as an income there, is that total amount of money that was associated with that project, or when you say income, is that profit, as it were?
We use income as very loose terminology because I don't think theoretically we're not really necessarily make profit. So that was like the total money that I could find associated with all the work we've done with that state. So some of that would have been when we did the initial work and we paid to do the design. Some of that will be from when we, so you know, technology actually sell the sensors, we're actually in the supply chain, so when we sell the sensors, we will get money for that. So no, it's not all profit. It is more like revenue, let's say, that comes in.
So the question that follows on from that is, you talked about income from these things being used to fund other things.
Mm.
So how does that work in the structure?
Yes, you're getting to the limits of my knowledge, because I often work where once I get the money in, that's internal finances issue. To be honest with you, I don't manage internal finances. That's finance and that's a departmental issue. Although I do need to let them know what's coming in, because they absolutely hate it if you bring something in right at the end of financial year, despite however much money it is. So you know, there is a bit of communication there. But in terms of how money moves around inside the organisation, that's sort of not finance have to deal with that.
So I was going to say, my understanding is that TD actually incorporates that into their CFI funds. So CFI is probably 99% or so funded from the external income that they're making, which is how they run CFI, which we have benefited from. So we're going to be the last to shout about Piranha making money.
So my follow-on other financial-type question, you put up your table of available monies for doing various different things in different pots of different sizes. I think one of the things that people struggle with is many of those are very, very small pots of money. So being able to do anything sensible with pots of that size is extremely difficult. So within this new and drive, are there any plans to change that structure and make these pots of money larger so it's more feasible to do something sensible?
I mean, I don't know what they all have planned, but I would say a lot of those pots were probably for either smaller projects or feasibility type studies, like especially the internal funding. It's more about priming work rather than delivering the full thing, right?
Yeah, but when you say something like 10k or 20k or people have to fit 50k, it's just not enough to get your teeth into something. Many people have struggled.
Yeah, I mean, you also need to find the right pot that's sized to what you want to do. So, if all you want to do is look at something for a small while, maybe this would work. If you're trying to do something more than that, you either need to look for a bigger pot, or arguably you could get a company to pay for it, depending on what you're doing.
Well, that's what I mean. To do the little thing to get it off the ground, I think the pot's still too small to do that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what funding is coming down the line. We have to see, but we could probably put in a request if we do.
You heard it follow?
Yes. No, it's just it really depends on what exactly it is that we're trying to do. But it's many of the things that we do for the purpose that we're doing it for are so far removed from what you would call a market-ready solution, like high TRL-type solution, that it does need a lot of development, and it does need somebody to look at what we do and see a business use for it, because what we're doing is so far removed from, I don't know, a medical x-ray set or something, that although we really know how to make x-ray sensors, we're off in a completely different direction. And it's finding the technologies that we use and seeing a potential for them that feels, I think, really hard for many of us.
Yeah.
Because we're looking in the complete other direction.
That's in the scenario where you're trying to translate something you're doing into industry, as opposed to the scenario where you have a capability or expertise and someone's asking you to apply that to their problem, which I think has made a slightly lower barrier to entry.
Yes, yeah.
Are there any other questions on Zoom? Any other questions on the room? If not, then let's thank Alton Wagon. In the 5 minutes, please feel
free to go. Just a reminder of the in-person event at 2 o'clock with the big events.
Yeah, no worries. Yeah, thank you.